like.
Oh no, man, he's a good dude.
Stone middle of the road interactions.
All right, welcome to Card Knock Live. This is episode 11.
Wait.
Oh.
Start.
I'm recording.
Are you doing it like that?
Thank you. Thank you for the 1, 2, 3 at least. Letting us
know. No, I like it to be nice and natural. You know, we just kind of go like kind of roll into a conversation. The episode's on.
Yeah, that didn't really work because we kind of stopped it in its tracks.
It's like,
but see,
so
it's awkward when you say, "Now we're gonna start," and then like everyone's like, oh, "Okay, all right, here we go."
No, I hear you, and I missed it, man. We needed to cast.
Yeah, Brandon, you're here. Can you give us the cue?
The cue? All right, guys. I think it's time to just blaze it.
Yes, yeah, I missed
we
that.
We need like a like a blunt sound in the background or something after Brandon says that.
A blunt sound like whack.
Yeah, that.
Yeah.
All right. Are you gonna explain what we're talking about with your broken internet tonight?
All right. Here we go. Welcome to Card Knock Life, episode 11. I'm your host, Corey, here with your host, Brandon.
Corey, you just grabbed my ass.
And John.
Yo.
And Daryl.
Hey.
And I'm going to start out by saying that I have the most whacked internet situation going on, so I'm going to simulate the driving listener experience and ask you guys about every single link you are looking at because I will not be able to see them. I'm only able to access Facebook, Skype, and Cockatrice right now, which leads to a very unproductive week for me, but I literally can't load web pages. So, John, you kind of missed that conversation before while you were dealing with...
Oh, no, I saw your Facebook, so I'm caught up on that. I'm also in your boat, too, since I'm on this phone here, as my computer decided to start up right as we started casting.
Oh, great. Okay, so Brandon and Daryl, you guys have the you have the document in front of you. You guys are going to, like, have to read some stuff out loud, okay?
Sure. I charge.
Especially while we're talking spoilers. But that's good for us, because I think we have a bad habit in... And maybe not. I think we have a bad habit of talking about stuff like everyone can see what we're looking at. So we're working on that right now.
Yeah,
this will be a good
like
flesh out.
Else.
That's right.
All right.
We need like some masterpiece theater reading of the podcast material.
You're dead to me. So I detect that this week will be quite a bit about origin spoilers and origin standard. Because we have a pre-release impending upon us, and we have a Star City coming for you guys in Chicago. Unfortunately, I moved away right before that. Decided to show up and make its way there.
You got an invitational coming up, though.
I do have an invitational coming up in about a month and a half here.
Which one?
It's a month now. New Jersey. I think it's in Somerset. I don't know. It's in hell, wherever it is. Because I would rather go anywhere than New Jersey. But, So, this is something just kind of trying to get my mind tuned to standard. I've been trying to figure out. So, I don't know how much you guys have ever read or talked to people about vintage and legacy and stuff like that. But essentially, certain formats can be boiled down to, you know, the pillars of the format, like the three or four cards that define the entire format and sort of say, you know, this is... There are decks that all fall into this direction. There are decks that all fall into this direction. And there are decks that all fall into this direction. And vintage, it's like Mishra's Workshop and Mana Drain and
Tibble.
You know, things like that. Tibble too good for vintage. In Legacy, you get things like Force of Will and Thalia sort of manning the helm of like different subtypes of decks. They're not Thalia, not necessarily a pillar, but you know, different sort of ways to helm the deck. And so I'm trying to nail down exactly, you know, what are the three or four pillars of standard, five even if you get to that? I kind of like have sat and puzzled my head about it for a while, and I've come to I felt like I've gotten two of them, but I don't know if there's like a third or fourth one that I'm missing. So I kind of wanted to kick the ball into the standard court and see if I could get some help with this. So what I've got here, I've got a list of four, and I don't know if I'm right or not. So I'm going to throw them out there and sort of go from there. So the first one I have is Goblin Rabble Master. Just headlining sort of the very aggressive Autarka Red decks, the mono red goblins that'll be a thing after, you know, we get to our good friend Goblin Piledriver getting spoiled, yeah. Jeskai aggro, things like that. Sort of the representative of the very, very aggressive decks that are going to try and kill you before you get online. Second being Den Protector, sort of the value engine, the mid-range staple that you're going to see headlining all the green X decks that are going to try and play this really grinded out game. Some of them may be trying to play a rather short and aggressive game and, you know, with Abzan aggro and things like that. Mm-hmm. But they're, you know, you're going to tend to try and generate a lot more value and have a lot more impressive, like, longer game cards than you will see from your aggressive decks. The third pillar being Haven of the Spirit Dragon, just sort of this recursive threat throughout all the decks, whether it be Green Red Dragons with Ashia or with Autarka, sorry, Naya Dragons with Dromoka, the five color dragons deck, just making the mana perfect. Haven of the Spirit Dragon and Ugin and Ojtai in the control decks. And so, it's,
Daryl, is that third one the one that you were hesitant on? Because you said you had two of them that you knew, and then the third one.
That is one of them. There's two more pillars.
Oh, okay.
There's that one, which I wasn't super, super happy with, and then Ashiok was the fourth one. Sort of the control decks that are trying to take advantage of the game, trying to slow things down and take advantage of being able to mill your opponents out, being able to take their creatures and sort of grind one for one, and then. That one might end up actually being dig through timing their way into the game and pushing themselves ahead. So I'm not 100% sure. I know that Rabble Master and Den Protector are two headline sort of two archetypes that you have to be concerned about. So, you know, what are the other two? Because I know there's just a big mana strategy and then there's a control strategy. So what are the sort of the premier cards there that, you know, if you can control these cards, then if your opponent draws less of them, if you can create ways to make them bad, can sort of nullify those pillars of the format. And that's sort of what I wanted to kick around with. What did I miss?
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Nykthos?
Nykthos? Okay.
The basis for not anymore, really, the devotion strategy. I mean, the green for red
the devotion, sure. No, you're right. Green devotion, actually, Daryl, especially green red devotion, was a big pillar. But are you talking like current, or are you talking post origins?
A little more post origins. I see Goblin Realm Master sort of still helming the aggressive decks, but it's sort of, and Den Protector will always have a place, but it's sort of what else is going to fill these other like mid range control roles, full control roles? You know, what's sort of going to be the pillars of those strategies?
I think one thing you really to understand about Standard is that, very much unlike Legacy, which I know is your forte in Modern, is that Standard is evolving every week, and it's really, really dependent on poaching the week. So, you know, that's a big part of it. I think some of the stuff that you rattled off certainly describes what the Standard environment's been like for the last month or two, but I think that's going to change quite a bit. Origins looks to have a really big impact on this Standard. Unlike previous core sets where we had a little splash of a couple cards here and there, I think it's really archetype defining for Origins. Like, I think we're going to see a lot of new decks, and I think we're going to see some pretty different directions that the established decks are going to take. Just because some of the cards are really strong that push certain strategies away. Like, I think the core of Standard before definitely were those pillars. I'd say if with emphasis, it was probably, you know, the Den Protector. What's the other guy? Deathmist Raptor. That kind of defined a lot of the mid-range decks because that engine was really good against, like, you know, control decks like Esper Dragons, which was really kind of the default control deck. The Adrian Sullivan-style Ashiok decks, you know, they were very few and far between, you know, just when a couple of pilots that were able to do that well could do it. But those have really died down. It's a lot more of the dragons decks that you mentioned, the 3 and 4 color dragons, like even some of them using that morph package. And then, you know, Autarka Red is, I mean, it's still around, but it's been pretty quiet. So it's mostly been, you know, Abzan and a ton of mid-range-ish decks, and then Mardu Dragons has been really big. But yeah, green devotion, green red devotion, like you mentioned, Corey, I think that's been one of the strongest decks. There was one guy in particular that won an SCG and then got second place at the following one with that deck. And in one of those top.
So the green red devotion is kind of like built around Thunderbreak region, isn't it?
No, the green red devotion, I don't think so. I think it's like more heavy base green. I haven't looked at the list in a while, but that if you look, if anybody who does have internet access tonight, if you're on Star City, I think it's like Chris Anderson or something, or Chris something or other. If you look at any of the SCG top eights, like Baltimore,
jeez,
or any of the ones
that guy.
Yeah, that guy's like been the boss with it. But I think in Baltimore, even Daryl, where you were at, I think there was two green devotion decks in the top eight. It was that guy losing in the finals, and then another one.
Mega
Baltimore was kind of it was a weird outlier too. I don't know if you noticed this, but there was two red decks in the top eight. One was a red devotion deck, and another one was a goblins deck. It was almost like two people that were like previewing what Origins might look like for red if you know, were to add a few cards and make those lists stronger. But I think Origins is, I think it's going to have a huge impact. I've been playtesting a ton, and there's a lot of cards that are really powerful. Like stuff like Languish, the new 4-mana Wrath-A-God for black, and the new Angel that has like a built-in propaganda both ways. Like those cards are pretty scary. There's five new Planeswalkers. I mean, everything's pretty interesting. I don't know. Brandon, what do you think about this, man?
I think the big player in those green-red devotion decks was Dragonlord Atarka and Ugin, because a lot of them were running that Haven that you were talking about earlier, Daryl. So that was really the top end of their curve, and then the Haven acted as, you know, getting the more gas late game, as everyone knows by now. And I guess as another jumping board, I think you guys are missing Siege Rhino as another major player. You know, every tournament I look at, there's probably like half a pool of Abzan mid-range players. So
it's not like the Den Protector show, though.
Yeah. Siege Rhino got stuck under the Den Protector rug of saying, well, he kind of falls in this mid-range pile where Den Protector is trying to grind out value by, like, picking your Siege Rhino back up and playing another Siege Rhino, because can you ever get enough Siege Rhinos? So
it'll be interesting to see if that shifts, because with Languish now, the morph package is still really good, but it kind of wants you, if you're going to play Abzan, it kind of makes you want to play more of a heavier mid-range, top-end mid-range control list, because Siege Rhino and Tassigar both miss it, right? That kind of thing. Kind of like we saw when, like around the time of Memphis, when it was certainly on the more controller side, you know, you play a Languish, then drop a Siege Rhino, Tassigar, or Elspeth or Ugin, something like that. Especially against like decks like Abzan Aggro, which I think was what won the Baltimore Open. That deck would just die in a fire to Languish, it seems like. So I think decks like that are going to need to adapt if that card's picked up.
Do you think we're going to see any unconditional Wrath spells anymore? Is it going to be like this now?
I mean, you'll see them at not 4-mana. They made the statement that 4-mana destroy all guys is not a thing that's ever going to happen again.
Okay, that's kind of what I figured. I mean, like, so, for example, Mortify got reprinted. Has that gotten reprinted since, let's see, have we had a Wrath of God or a Damnation since Mortify was reprinted in the last core set that we had it?
Mortify? What's that?
Am I thinking
that's not
online?
The card you're, that's not
you're
the
thinking
card
of. You're thinking of targeted removal spell. I mean, or you're thinking of a Wrath, but.
Yeah, what's the one that gives all your creatures -1/-1 for each swamp?
Mutilate.
So we had this that in the core set, didn't we?
That's conditional. It certainly requires you to have swamps.
Right. That's what I'm saying. So we didn't get. Yeah. When was the last time we had Wrath of God? When was the last time we had Damnation? It's
like
been a while.
Supreme Verdict was in Return of Ravnica. I mean, that's basically Wrath of God.
I mean, the condition for that one is that it's a gold card, which I know it's not really, because you can play it in plenty of decks, but it's much more limited than a one color Wrath spell.
Yeah,
we had Day of Judgment in a fairly recent core set. That was the next most recent.
Yeah, M something or other. Let me check. Investigative journalism. We'll be right back.
I mean, did they actually say definitively though, Daryl, that there's going to be you know, no more four mana wraths, or is that just implied by the fact
that they said that definitively? I'll Google that and I'll pull the article so we can put it in the show notes.
I think that's good. For all intents, it promotes diversity in your format.
Yeah, Corey, I agree. I mean, I think that, you know, having these conditional wraths makes you have to work on your deck building skills, which is always good. I mean, I think Languish, I mean, -4/-4 for four mana, that kills the majority of, you know, what's relevant. And it makes you make your deck very specific around it if you're going to play it, or have to do a decent amount of modification when you're playing it or bringing it in. But, right.
Yeah, it's totally dead in some matchups.
Well, I mean, it's dead against control, which at least in the early weeks, you know, is not going to be that big a factor. And even there, if people are on the more popular control decks of yesterday, which was like Esper Dragons, Languish kills Odatai. So, I mean, there's some limitations even there against control that they don't want to see. So I don't know. I mean, yeah, he's a 5/4. And then also, you know, any deck that's playing Languish could potentially be playing Drown in Sorrow or other cards like that. The other new aspect, too, I don't know if this card, how much play it's going to see, but it's gotten a lot of buzz from some of the pros is, and you guys, Daryl, you guys, Brandon, have the spoiler probably in front of you, but I can't remember the name. It's a 5-mana spell. It's a Demonic Tutor, and when you have Spell Mastery, you get to add 3 black to your pool, so you can go tutor up like a Drown in Sorrow or a Hero's Downfall and play it at the same time.
Yeah, give me a second. I'll find that for you.
Tutor up a Languish.
So, yeah, like Chapin's has a podcast, and he devoted like an entire episode to like Infinite Obliteration, which is the new like Thought Hemorrhage kind of card in conjunction with that Demonic Tutor and that sort of thing. And then Liliana, obviously, is 3 mana, the new Lily, which seems to be a powerful card that, you know, people aren't sure where the home is for it yet.
Yeah. Dark Petition is the
name Dark of the tutor. Yep, Dark Petition. Thank you. Just found it.
Speaking of black, too, I don't know how much you guys have been digging through the spoiler or playing online, but there's a lot of cards for Black Devotion again. I mean, we don't have Pack Rat, but I've seen some lists and I've played some, and there's that Erebos Titan, which looks to be, in my opinion, so far it seems like one of the strongest cards in the set. It's the 5/5 indestructible when they control no creatures, and it has a buyback ability, and then you have like Defiler of Souls, which is like a 3/1 for 2 black, and it has a buyback ability. So you've got a lot of like nasty black cards that could easily get a shell going again.
Yeah, we're getting way on tangent here, but that guy, I should say, has like the most badass art in the set. His armor's made out of like the faces of the souls that he defiles, apparently.
The Defiler of Souls card?
Isn't Erebos? I think he has something else. Maybe that's like the Titan guy. Is he
Erebos Titan? Is Titan. Yeah, he's just wearing skulls, man.
Oh damn!
That's a totally different card, isn't it? That's the five. Four. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Got it.
See, this but that card's this insane. Like, you know, I mean, like, I never like to do top 10 lists or anything like that when a new set comes out.
Yeah.
But like, you know, you kind of get an impression when you start playing, especially on like when I'm playing Cockatrice and the set's not officially released yet. You start to get like an impression of which cards seem to be really standing out. And I think like Erebos' Titan, the Archangel or whatever the White Angel is for 4 mana, that's a 3/5. Mm-hmm. And some of the Planeswalkers, they seem really strong. Like Nissa and Liliana and Chandra have all impressed me pretty much. But that Angel is insane because the white decks, you know, got so many tools. Like you got the new Gideon, which is, you know, being heralded as one of the best white one drops of all time.
Let me get the read down on that angel real quick. Archangel of Tithes. Yeah, sure. Archangel of Tithes, 1/3 white, 3/5 flyer. 3/5 flyer. As long as it's untapped, creatures can't attack you or a planeswalker you control unless they pay 1 for each of those creatures. And as long as it's attacking, creatures can't block unless their controller pays 1 for each of those creatures. So, very, very powerful in the aggressive decks. When you get the, you know, attack with my Archangel and 4 guys, go to blocks, can't play removal spell because you have to pay all your mana to block.
The issue is that this card is in the decks that I've seen so far that, like, pros have proposed or that Like, I was playtesting with a buddy the other day, and we did a bunch of games, and he was playing some of these decks. And the issue is that the cards that are in the list typically are, like, either Gideon or no Gideon. You have Knight of the White Orchid, the new reprint. You got Bramaz. You have potentially Wingmate Rock, and you have that Angel. So, like, you're already dealing with a ton of stuff that's super difficult to deal with. And then when that Angel comes down, like, the board just completely stops. Most opponents can't do anything unless you have, like, a spot removal spell for it. And since it has 5 toughness, it has to be, like, a very specific spot removal spell. So, like, Control, I think, could tear it apart a little bit. But otherwise, like, any other mid-range or aggro deck is going to have a really hard time with this guy.
Besides the God Heliod, is there anything that cares about white devotion? Because that's a lot of white mana symbols and all that you just mentioned.
Yeah, so, I mean, it one of the things that's helpful with it is that, I mean, it's kind of hurtful because the card is not easily splashable. Like, Sam Black had a list that had a little bit of blue in it, so you could play Dragonlord Ojutai with it. That's one of the ones that my buddy was playing against me.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's kind of scary, too, because that's another card that goes alongside of it. But then... I mean, that white enables Nykthos to be pretty powerful. So some of these lists, what they were doing is using the white devotion strategy, not really for Heliod too much, maybe as a one of,
yeah,
but more so for Secure the Wastes. Because you could, like, drop, like, I was playing today and I had, he dropped a 9-point Secure the Wastes on me at end of turn. So, yeah, there's that.
You can also dump that mana onto the Heliod activations if you want to go that route. But
there's that too, yeah.
Well, I mean, there's got to be something else that has white devotion, isn't there?
I'm gonna do this. Like, in terms of, like, there's not, like, I mean, well, there's, like, you know, the only every color only got one, you know, god. So,
yeah,
I mean, there's other devotion cards.
And stuff. Let me see. I'm going to look.
Yeah, I mean, this on my phone. Oh, as far as what enables devotion, you're saying?
No, what card has devotion to white printed on it? Is there anything? I mean, like, we've got, for example, okay, here, I've got the search.
You got, like, Gray Merchant.
Ward. Yeah, like, Gray Merchant is an example of one that has black devotion.
Yeah, well,
oh,
what
I see what you're saying. Yeah, Corey. There's a soldier. It's, like, 6 mana. It's, like, a 6 mana, like, 1-1 or something, and it makes, like, 1-1.
Oh, yeah.
So then devotion. That was always kind of a really bad card. Yeah, I mean, that's why nobody really, like, played white devotion, but I think they just have, like, a really solid foundation now. And also, like, when you get to 6 mana, instead of playing that guy, these decks can just play Elspeth. So, I mean, you can get, like, a, you know, much earlier Elspeth on the table. And you have a lot of options now that you have, you know, more of a core foundation.
That's true. Another white devotion card, Acolyte's Reward, is 1 and a white for an instant. Prevent the next X damage that would be dealt to target creature, and then redirect it to target creature or player. And that's devotion to white. So, I don't know. Probably not worth building a white devotion deck for. That's an uncommon.
Well, I think, like, Daryl, you were talking about, like, pillars and foundation.
Yeah, yeah.
I was reading Sam Black's recent article, and he brought up some really great points about deck building. And he was talking about, I do this in EDH sometimes, but I didn't even think about doing this in Constructed. He talks about, instead of focusing on, like, the curve and, like, necessarily stuff that would fit with, say, like, devotion, that he builds around like, small cores of cards. So, like, this card, he takes a card and then he, like, looks at 4 or 5 other cards that have, like, real high synergistic value, and he makes these little packages, you know, and then builds upon those packages. I can't remember exactly what he called it, but basically he makes, like, a decision tree out of it when he's doing deck building, you know, forming these little, you know, pentagons or what have you, and connecting cards as they, you know, make sense with each other. And so this way, instead of, like, saying, well, we need another 2-drop, or we need another 3-drop, or we need something for Nykthos, it helps to, like, have a bunch of cards that have, like, a real high synergistic value, so that, you know, even if you draw something out of order, it's going to make up for it in value, kind of thing.
Okay. Sam Black has drawn a bunch of pentagons.
Yeah, pretty much.
That's why he's so good at the game. So, speaking of pillars, then, can we anticipate the pillars of Standard after Origins, or is it just too far off? it's so hard to say like what's going to be good in a set before it comes out, because so much of it depends on the metagame, and so much of the metagame is informed by the metagame, and you know, we get very pigeonholed into the top eights of the last week, and you know.
I'm going to put money on Goblin Pile Driver.
Okay, I mean, that's kind of where I was going with that. Is are Goblins going to be good? Is that one that's going to change the game?
I mean, like, there's certainly the, like, Foundry Steep Denizen into Goblin Pile Driver into, like, Goblin Rabblaster attacking for a bunch. Like, attacking for, what, 4, 5, 6, 7, attacking for 8, and then untap, trigger. Like, if you play, like, a Hordling Outburst or Krinko's Command or whatever, Dragon Fodder or whatever that card is, then you get attacked for 100,000 and you're just dead. So, I mean, it's going to come online before Languish to be able to do that on the play. That's true, that's so true. If Languish makes the shift as the 4-mana, is the, you know, the 4-mana Wrath, air quotes, then everyone will try and get under it with Goblins, and so it's just like...
Right.
So I'm going to bet on Goblin Pile Driver. That's...
Brandy, have you been testing any standard with Origins yet? I know John has.
No, I've been experimenting with decks, but my main goal is to try to go to the SCG Open in Chicago. So really, if I had to put my money on it, like Daryl said, it's an aggro deck that's going to win. It's an aggro deck that wins every new release. So,
Well, sort of.
Sort of. Okay,
I agree with that. I don't know if you guys saw, like, I wrote an article fairly recently, and I was talking about the history of the last couple opens, because that's usually the case, Brandon. I think like with what you're saying, you know, typically like red aggro or white aggro or what have you is, you know, good on week one because of the fact that people are trying things. But, I went to the Cons Open in Indy, and there was another one in Jersey that same weekend, and, Abzan actually won that open, like an Abzan mid-range or reanimator style list. And Mono Red was actually shut out of the top eight in that tournament. So I think normally that rings true. And like, I'd bank on some of that this time too, but, I don't know. Like, I mean, some of the cards in Cons are really strong, like Abzan and Jeskai and stuff. So you never know.
Yeah. Well, a lot of that hinged on Siege Rhino being dominant, but Siege Rhino isn't very dominant anymore.
Mm-hmm.
So, I don't know, it's not. So
because those aggro decks were stomped out because of the Siege Rhino life gain, but if Siege Rhino's kind of died off or nobody's trying to build new decks with that Rhino, I don't know how they're really going to stem the bleeding from somebody jamming the Foundry Street Denizen, Pile Driver, Rabble Master combo.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, we'll see. I think Siege Rhino's still really powerful, but... which is kind of scary, but you're right. If people try to go like too much experimentation, or they, you know, hedge their bets too much on dragons or control or that sort of thing, then they'll definitely be punished. But Daryl, you brought up like Pile Driver and stuff too. I'm really interested to see what people think about this card and what's, you know, what the impact is going to be. Cause I mean, I'm obviously as a red player, like super high on him, and like I've tested goblins a bunch and I like it for the most part, but I think it's a little more underwhelming than I expected. Like, I think the nut draws are pretty good, but it's really easy for people to pick you apart if they are prepared for it. And that's kind of concern. I don't know if it's going to top absolutely. 8 or not.
Yeah, that was the problem. Like, that's why Legacy Goblins is so good, because they have, you know, the ability to create a quick kill by giving their creatures haste and playing multiple Pile Drivers. But they also had that card advantage. So the standard Goblins deck doesn't have Goblin Ring. They reprinted Sylvan Messenger, try to push elves, and then instead of reprinting Goblin Ringleader and Pile Driver, they just gave you Pile Driver so that you couldn't have this card advantage engine to give you more goblins to kind of fuel the Pile Driver shenanigans. So like the early double Pile Driver starts, or like Pile Driver Rabble Master, are going to be really strong. The protection from blue line has like no relevance, because in the standards
there's some relevance.
Very, very minute, I think. Cause like,
I mean, Mono Blue Devotion has some tools, but yeah, it's probably minute. I mean, it's probably not going to be a big deck, but there is potential there. But
yeah, in the standards where like Pile Driver was a thing, one of them, that line of text was completely irrelevant because Pile Driver played against Affinity, and so we don't talk about that standard because it was bad. But the other one, protection from blue, was great. It had a lot of relevance. People were playing blue creatures. So, you know, Piledriver went from, like, a big threat in Goblins with, like, Sharpshooter and stuff like that to just, like, that has to die, and we have to play another color to kill it. Or so, right. I mean, at this point, I don't think we're going to be as much of that afraid of Goblin Piledriver. But it's going to have the ability to... It's got the Sam Black effect, what you guys just talked about. It definitely is another good centerpiece for this very synergistic Goblin strategy. Just like, play a bunch of one-drop Goblins. Piledriver and Rattlemaster both have the same ability. Just pile in Hordling Outburst. Just Hordling Outburst. Attack you with, for a million. You know, untap, or am I still, alive? Right, sweet. Attack you for a million again. And you have a Tarkus Command and Skullcrack and, or not Skullcrack anymore, but a Tarkus Command and Lightning Strike and things like that. So I think you're going to be able to push, you're definitely going to be able to put a lot of work in with, you know, Eidolon sort of is like non-synergistic with that part of the strategy, but I think it's still good enough that you can play it in the sideboard because you're expecting your opponent to bring in removal. So it's like you can play the sub game. So I think it gives Mono Red like this very nut draw sort of hand. Mm-hmm. Or sort of game plan, and then you can board in sort of different cards, like different tools like Eidolon and things like that to try and, you know, okay, we're going to lean a little less in the synergy and move towards, you know, being a little grindier, I suppose, with your red right. deck, if you can call it that.
So I think to Brandon's point, too, sorry, Corey, go ahead.
No, sorry, I'm going to change the subject. I'm going to say what you're going to say.
Oh, well, I was going to say to Brandon's point about, like, you know, capitalizing on week one with an aggro deck, I think Goblins... Like, on paper, it looks like that perfect shell. Like, it's week one, and what's the default, like, fast, aggressive aggro deck you can play? And the Goblins deck looks, like, terrifying in that respect. But, like, I kind of wonder, yeah, I kind of wonder if people are just going to be too prepared. I mean, like, that Cons Open, one of the reasons that Mono Red did really bad was not so much even for Siege Rhino. I mean, that was certainly a huge impact. But, like, Mono Green Devotion was a huge deck at that Open. It was something that had been buzzed about, and it came in droves. I remember there was at least like 20% of the field was on that deck. And I had actually prepared for that because a lot of the Madison guys who are pros, you know, had been playing that deck and testing, and they had just been smashing everybody. So I kind of figured that'd be popular, and then it was. But that kept Mono Red down pretty good because you got Courser and Life Gain and all the brick walls and Nykthos and all that stuff so they can get online pretty fast. And I'm kind of concerned that might be the case here with Origins, because, like, Corey, you were wondering, you know, what potentially could the format look like. Well, the two decks that I've seen the biggest buzz over have been Devotion decks and the new Enchantment decks. I don't know if you guys have been following any of the recent articles at all, but Pascal Maynard, the guy who won the last GP with Abzan, he posted an article on Channel Fireball about a bunch of enchantment decks based around, like, Starfield of Nyx. It's a new card.
Yep.
Yeah, the new, like, Opalescence card that makes all your enchantments into dudes.
Yep. You get a guy, you get an enchantment back in return, you have five enchantments, your enchantments are man's equal to their mana cost.
Man. Yeah, there is a million of those decks running around right now. On Cockatrice, there's like five or six pros writing about them. There's a bunch of guys in my circle that are playing it for Chicago. So that deck, I think, is actually a serious contender. I played against it a bunch online, and it's super, super scary. I mean, it basically has eight Courser Crucifix.
So let me put it to you this way. People are going to underestimate the actual best card in that deck, which is Sigil of the Empty Throne.
Sure.
If you've never played against it, you don't know how powerful it is, but in that standard format that it first came out in, there were cards like Spreading Seas floating around. So you would Spreading Seas your Jund opponent's Tri-Land and make a 4-4 and draw a card. And they would just go, oh no, how am I ever going to win this game? And you pile that on with things like Oblivion Ring or Vanishing Light, just these very utility-based enchantments. And you you tack on there, oh, by the way, you get a 4-4. Well, that's really hard to beat. So people, I think, are going to underestimate how much card advantage all these 4-4s and Eidolon of Blossoms. Like, if people haven't actually played against Legacy Enchantress, they're going to get to experience that for about 6 weeks. Because Eidolon of Blossoms drawing you a card every time you play an enchantment, and then you make 4-4s, it's not going to be fun for people at all.
Yeah, I mean, that card's really good. I've seen it in play because I was playing against the deck a lot, and it's been, like, pretty much when that card hits the table, like I've had to either win that turn or just lose because the card is extremely powerful in that deck. I mean, you have the problem that that deck's, the other Courser crew fix that deck gets is like a 3-mana dude. Can't remember the name offhand, but anytime you play an enchantment, you gain a life. And then also all of your enchantments cost one less to play. Yep. So you can play like 3-mana Eidolon of Blossoms and draw cards off that. You can play, you know, your Coursers, you know, anything that's basically in your deck. And and the deck just has a ton of gas too. I mean, it has crew fixes, insight, that sort of stuff too.
I'm kind of interested if that deck will actually go. Actually, I have to figure out. I'm going to hold that comment because I was thinking about would it go Abzan for Underworld Coinsmith, but I don't remember which part of Underworld Coinsmith is Devotion. Is the sorry, I'm going to type for a second here.
It's one black, one white, 2/2, and
oh, it's only you gain. Two. It's Constellation. You gain a life. I thought it was Constellation Drain your opponent, and I was like, that's.
No, it's pretty too good.
Nope. All right. I haven't seen him in any of the lists. I've seen well, one of the popular choices is the Ram too, the 05 Ram. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I totally thought that Underworld Coinsmith was like when you play an enchantment, drain your opponent one, and so I was just like, so this is just like Underworld Coinsmith and Starfield and Nyx, and I'll get this guy back and drain you, and I'll play an Eidolon and drain you and draw a card. So this is not as good as I thought it was. We can ignore the Underworld Coinsmith portion. Onward and upward, please.
One last deck before we move on here, Corey. Another deck that's been popular has been Elves. I don't know if you guys have seen this action. This was already a buzz about it because the Elves pretty much just got created with this set. But they did a video on Star City between BBD and Chris Van Meter, and like Elves did okay. It wasn't that great looking, but I think his build was just really bad because I've played against people online and they've had much better builds, and they've talked to me about how they like modified CVM's build, and it's been way more consistent. That deck is super explosive, and it taps into like the Collected Company Court of Calling area of Standard. So I think that deck could also be a contender for week one for the pilots that can figure out how to build it properly.
I see. Actually, John, that was what I was going to talk about. Is it really that good?
I think Elves is like the aggro deck that can beat goblins and go a bit deeper.
Okay. The list I've seen is a lot of like do nothing elves that are just 1/1s with like there's no lord, right? They miss out. Well, there's the 4-mana lord. Is it good? Is it enough to, you know?
The 4-mana lord is insane. Like the 4-mana lord is a lord, and when he attacks, each other attacking elf gives you one life.
Yeah.
But like the fact that you can like Court of Calling for him makes him pretty important. I think the really key centerpiece that puts the deck over the top though is there's the 3-mana elf that is a 3/2, and he's a gray merchant. You don't gain life, but you drain your opponent for the number of elves you have.
Yeah.
Pretty unique take on that card's different than what we're used to with these guys.
Yeah, it's kind of like modern though, or not modern, but it's kind of like the old, like, I guess Legacy would be comparable. I mean, obviously the Legacy deck's way better, but it's almost like a combo elf deck because they have the aggro aspect where they can punish you that way, but they usually just get to a point very early in the game where they start tutoring up the gray merchant dude and they just kill you out with that guy.
Yeah, it sounds like a slight improvement on Legacy Elves, because that, like, I think that honestly, after reading that card, it won't supplant Crater Hoof on Legacy Elves, but it has a place because you can create an elf combo deck in Legacy that doesn't use the combat set, which is actually really powerful. Mm-hmm. And I think it's the same thing for the Standard deck that, you know, you're not gonna play an elf and draw a card every time you play an elf, because that's reasonable, but you're going to play enough elves that you can, at some point, when the board becomes Siege Rhinos and Tassigers and, you know, 5/6s or Gurmag Anglers, whatever people are putting in play that's just big and fat and dumb, you can play, you know, these guys and beat them without the combat step, which is, I think, is going to be big. And I could see a Whip of Erebos style elves deck where you're just trying to, like, make that elf as many times as you can. Just like, I'm going to put this card to play 7 times. And if you can beat me when I put it into play 7 times, you're the winner. But it's going to be really hard for you to do that.
you've kind of got like access to 12 of them in your deck with Collective Company and Court of Calling too. Court of Calling can hit this guy. So I guess that's pretty good. I didn't even see him in the list that I looked at, but maybe it was created before he was spoiled, because it was like, it just looked like a bunch of mana elves, and it was like, there could be some really bad draws in that deck, and unless you're playing all the Collective Companies and Court of Callings, you just got a bunch of 1/1s.
Yep.
Cool.
But, you know, I mean,
go on.
I was going to say, from what I've seen, Corey, it's really consistent. Like, I've almost never seen a bad draw out of the deck. It's almost just like, really, what can you do to dismantle it? And maybe people will figure some angles out there, but like, it's super consistent. And the fact that you mentioned like the 12 sources for that gray merchant elf,
mm-hmm.
like they usually, that's what happens. Like they play one out of their hand or wherever they have it. And then they tutor up another one and potentially a third one. And that's like, that happens almost every game.
Right.
So yeah, he really is like Daryl, like you were saying, he could change legacy in that respect with elves, because I think it's just the best win condition, it seems like.
Right. Reclamation Sage is around too. That's a great utility card if you're going to play that sort of toolbox kind of deck.
You say that, but you have not yet been killed by the Crater of Behemoth.
Oh, yeah.
I played legacy and been killed by. I was playtesting against legacy elves the other day when I was at the shop, but okay. Yeah, I mean, like, yeah, Crater Oath's really good. Don't get me wrong, Crater Oath's super good, but
yeah, like you said,
don't have to use the combat step,
which is big. It can definitely help when the board gets clogged down.
So, do you think this is Magic Origins, right? We're talking like the history of Magic, and we're like celebrating all like the most classic like parts of the game. We've got elves, we've got goblins. Is it a flavor fail that Wizards did not do like some kind of like zombie tribal or merfolk tribal or whatever white would be, soldier tribal? It seems needs zombies.
It's not. Elves versus Goblins is like, it was the very first dual deck. It's just the thing that like Magic is known for.
I guess so.
There wasn't a flavor fail.
But zombies.
I think it's a set that they're trying to actually just restart the flavor of Magic. You know, for too long, Magic had these characters like Urza and Mishra and all the old planeswalkers that basically they couldn't represent in the cards because they'd just be like 2-mana win the game cards.
Mm-hmm.
And they just weren't very interesting characters because they couldn't die. And so around Time Spiral Block, they kind of transitioned to these newer planeswalkers that were a little bit weaker. And, you know, now we have the Origins 5, which is kind of where their jumping point is going into the new storyline, so I think it's actually pretty successful.
Yeah, I get it. I mean, that's cool. Nice is an elf, I suppose, right? So that,
you're kind of limited too, I think, you know, Corey, with like what you can fit, you know, in the set. I mean, I agree with you. It'd been cool to see like all the classic tribes and stuff, and there's like a sprinkling of that in there, but like, yeah, Brandon, like you were saying, like that's like kind of the original, you know, the brew and whatnot of where Magic started. And like, I don't know, it seems like they did a pretty good job of representing, like, the mechanics and the theme of Magic over the course of time.
We did get the two iconic tribes of Elves and Goblins, so that's pretty good.
Well, I think Zombies is an iconic tribe, and if Liliana brings people back from the dead, they're zombies, right?
Well, you get a zombie out of Liliana.
Yeah, there you go, that's one zombie card, but now we want a zombie lord. We got Undead, the guy that comes back from your graveyard in the last set. They could have just tagged that on a couple more zombie cards, build a zombie deck.
Just stop.
Is Nantuko Huska zombie? Because he got reprinted.
No, it is not.
Yeah, he's an insect zombie.
Oh, he's an insect zombie? They actually made him a zombie?
Yeah, he's an insect zombie.
I've seen him in some interesting lists online where he like combos with Liliana and Bloodsoak Champion and some other stuff. He could be kind of interesting, but he's been like a classic Magic card that we've seen over the years.
Yeah.
Don't make fun of me. He used to just be an insect.
And then, right? Yeah, maybe so.
And now he's an insect zombie. So,
you think that guy's going to see play?
I mean, in the synergistic decks, it's definitely a build-around card. It's not.
Yeah.
Is it Black Devotion material?
No.
You don't think so?
Yeah, I think it's more like zombie the opposite. Sacrifice kind of thing.
Yeah. It achieves the exact opposite of Black Devotion, which is eat all your permanents, make a really big guy.
We're talking about Nantuko. I was thinking Nantuko Shade.
No.
Damn.
That card's sweet. I wish they'd.
That card's sweet, but no. they took Ghost.
That card would have been way too good in Black Devotion. So
yeah, that would have been really good. Okay, never mind. Onward. Nintuko Husk. All right, so we're going on.
Onward. Are we out of decks? I'm out of decks.
One last card. One last card. Right, they did. You mentioned the tribes. There is a Merfolk in the set, and there's sayings that he's going to have a potential. Yeah. He potentially could be modern good. So he's the 2 blue for 2/2, and when he comes into play, he bounces a creature, and you can pay an extra 2 to play him as Flash.
Oh, right. Yeah, that guy is good.
So
yeah, bounces a tapped creature. I'm sorry, but
So the fun part is like a lot of times you're gonna get to play this against Splinter Twin because they play like the spell is their protection. And so you're going to get to flash this guy in and bounce their twin guy with the Splinter Twin on it in response to the trigger and break up the combo. So that's like a thing you can do if you're playing, you know, Tribal Merfolk. You now have an answer to just not dying on the spot to Splinter Twin. You can just like flash this guy in, bounce your Splinter Twin guy, bounce your Exarch, call it a day. So, I mean, it does kind of allow for some play for the tribal deck in modern for Merfolk. And it's a 2-mana spell, so they get the Aether Violet in on 2 and still get the Aether Violet Lords in afterwards. So it's actually kind of nice.
Yeah. Sweet. Merfolk's just getting better and better. They keep printing good Merfolk. I mean, it's not going to get worse. But the modern deck is like nearing tier 1, don't you think?
I think it is tier 1. I mean, I think it's one of those sleeper decks that people just like don't realize is really good.
Yeah.
Every time I've played against it, I think that deck's just super strong. And it, like, there was a GP a couple weeks ago where 2 of them top 8 and 1 of them won. So, I mean, I think that deck's very much tier 1.
Right. After
it's
that
just happened, maybe it's not, maybe it's tier 1.5 because it's not as present as the other decks. But competitively, consistent. I think it's as good.
It's not consistent. You can flood out, you can draw a bunch of Aether Vials. I think the deck needs to drop Aether Vials and just play all good Merfolk. And then you'd get the consistency over the explosive plays. But that GP happened in all my Lord of Atlantis's and my whatever the M12 Merfolk Lord sold out.
Master of the Pearl Trident?
Yeah, Master of the Pearl Trident. That's right. Okay, sorry. Should we go on? Should probably go on.
Ship it.
All right, so I actually have a bunch of spoiler stuff in my section, I'm going to kind of change the focus a little bit here. I've got a couple of cards that I picked out as kind of like potential players in Standard and maybe even Modern, maybe even Legacy, but I want to see what you guys think because these are all like low pre-sales. This is like my favorite thing to do when a set comes around. The cards that are like pre-sale for like $10, $12, you know, like I'm not even going to mention those, but stuff that's like $1.25, like I can see these being, you know, like if they're good and played in Standard, they could be $5, right, at a rare level. But I'm gonna list off some cards. I want to hear your thoughts, and if we can keep it short, then we can keep things moving a little bit because we're trying to end on time tonight here. All right, so the first one, Despoiler of Souls. We talked a little bit about Black Devotion. Can someone with internet pull that one up? If I can't find it.
Yep, I got you. Okay, it's right, black for a 3/1 creature horror, can't block. Black, exile 2 other creature cards from your graveyard, return from your graveyard to the battlefield. I've actually been hearing a lot of rumbling this is the next Ikarid.
Okay.
But if for those of you that don't know what that card is, it's a 4-mana, 3/1 haste. Exile a black creature from your graveyard to put it into play, and then sacrifice it at the end of your turn. So the parallel stops at it can be put from your graveyard into play.
Right, and it's a 3.
Right, I mean, and it's one's a centerpiece of Dredge, the other one's mostly a standard card, probably.
Yeah, like people are going to try and fit this into like a Dredge strategy, and the fact you have to pay 2 mana for it is terrible. I could see it being like another Bloodsoaked Champion in like a mono black aggro deck, because you can just go like Bloodsoak and do a spoiler, and like you can create these situations where they spend removal spells on your guys, and then you attack and get your Bloodsoak champions back, and then you pay 2 mana and exile your other creatures that are just dead and put the spoiler into play and untap with like 7 power. So I can see situations in which this guy is going to be very good in long games, but but it's, I think it's going to be strictly locked into like a mono black aggro strategy. I don't think you're going to see this creep into abs and aggro lists or anything like that. Like, we're just going to see, you know, this guy's got one home and one home only, and that's mono black.
I think he could bleed into Mardu a bit.
Yeah?
I think there's room there, too. I mean, Brad Nelson actually had this on his top 10 cards. I don't know, Daryl. I'm kind of in your camp. I don't think it's limited to one deck because, like, it's a potentially good card for, like, sacrifice-type themes, whether it be Liliana or using the Fleshbag Marauder reprint and Merciless Executioner, that sort of stuff. But, like, yeah, I don't know how far it's going to get with that double black mana cost. That's going to be kind of a limiter. It's also really hard to get this guy back in play. Like, it's not the easiest thing in every game to get two dudes in your yard besides him.
Oh, yeah, it is. It does say creature card, doesn't it?
Yeah.
It's out two creature cards.
Yeah. Okay. So, your question, Corey, for sale price, SEG has pre-sale at $199, so $2 for the Spoiler of Souls.
Yeah, you think that's right? I mean, in long run?
I think in the... I mean, let's talk long runs. In the six-month long run, I think if it sees sort of any sort of play, it'll be a $4 or $5 card, because I think it's just one of those, like, really, like, inanely, like, it's internally very powerful. It's just very hard to create a shell for it to fit into.
Right.
And then the long, long run, it'll be a dollar, I don't think, yeah.
Like, oh, I think
standards.
I'm talking, like, the stretch standard here.
Yeah.
It's too diverse, I think, to allow that card to be more than $4 or $5. I agree with Daryl. I think that would be the max I could see it getting. I mean, it's spoiler season, so like if you're buying in on cards, especially standard cards, it's not the end of the world to spend $2 on something like that, because if it does get to five, potentially $7 at some point in time over standard, and you're able to sell to roughly around that price, I mean, you're going to make a little money off of it, but yeah, it's not a card I'd spec heavy on or anything. I don't think that card is that great.
Don't want 20 in my portfolio, but would gladly have 4.
No, I'm not suggesting that these are any kind of financial specs or anything, but I'm thinking like 1 month from now when things pan out, people are excited about the set and the availability is still limited. That's when like some cards like this, if it gets played a lot, are going to be up to, you know, $5 or so.
Sure.
Is this something that you trade for or whatever, blah, blah, blah. So Dispose of Souls verdict has potential, but very niche, right?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Yeah. So another one for you. Exquisite Firecraft.
I got you.
Love that card.
Yeah.
Can you read
one that? Super good.
Yep. One red. Exquisite Firecraft deals 4 damage to our creature player. So it's basically an upgrade on Flame Javelin because it is one colorless instead of red. And then spell.
Though, right?
It is a sorcery, unfortunately. Yeah, sorcery is a big deal. So I mean, take your upgrades where you can get them. I think the upgrade will be on the spell mastery that I'm getting ready to read. If there are 2 or more instant and/or sorcery cards in your graveyard, Exquisite Firecraft can't be countered by spells or abilities.
Okay, so that's like the nail in the coffin for burn decks. Is this going to put burn on the map or what?
I don't think it will put burn like. Burn won't suddenly jump to tier 1 all of a sudden.
Are we talking about?
I'm thinking standard. I'm thinking like maybe like an aggro burn deck.
Like a Jeskai Firewitch deck.
Yeah.
I think this is the best red card in the entire set. Like this card's awesome. I pre-ordered my playset already.
Yeah.
I've been playing it a ton. It's fantastic. Like it's exactly what red just wanted, another Stoke the Flames. Like they wanted, like, another War Leader's Helix, like, 4 damage spell.
So John, I'll ask this question. Does this, like, does this set up, like, a very, very high-quality Jeskai Fireworks deck, as they call it, Jeskai Burn, with 12 4 damage burn spells and Lightning Strike? Is that, like, this? Because that's, like...
People are trying to do that, yeah. I mean, a lot of people...
Is it a thing, or is it bad? Like,
well,
that
people are trying. I don't know yet. Yeah, I think that's something that I'm going to try to hopefully figure out within the next week. People are trying to figure it out in my group. And, like, Jeskai is definitely what's on the table. People have the Treasure Cruise. They want to make a burn deck in standard. There's also that Pyromancer's Goggles, which kind of pairs well with that style of deck if you want to go that route. That card's actually really impressive, too.
Really?
Even though
I was kind of surprised.
It's pretty insane. I mean, like, the minute you get it online, like, it can be real scary. But I think just, like, taking Exquisite Firecraft alone, the card can plant itself in almost any deck that has access to red, whether it be Mardu, Jeskai, or what have you. And it's really good. Like, it's a really important piece, I think, in the format, because there's a lot of X4s that matter. The can't be countered clause still matters in Standard, and that potentially could even break the card into Modern and Legacy. And like, the sorcery speed part sucks, but the card is so important for what it does on the turns that it does it, and what it adds to some of these decks, like Daryl was saying. Even if you take like your standard Jeskai list that's not like a burn list, this card adds a lot of extra value and damage that the deck didn't have before, that was kind of like that smidge of power that it might have been missing. So I think this card is super good. I think at $4, it's actually kind of on the low side. I could potentially see this card.
Oh, is it really?
Currently $4 on Star City, and I could see this card being anywhere from $6 to $12, depending on how much it gets bought up in the format, how powerful red is in the format. I'm not sure on that part yet, but as far as playability-wise, I think this card slots into just about anything that wants to play red. It's really good.
I would buy 10 of them at $4. I might actually put my money where my mouth is and buy 10 of this card and hold on to it. Because
it was
that. That's pretty high. I realize it's $4.
There's cards that have been sold out on Star City so far. You know, they've gone through a bunch of their batches of pre-orders, and I've been watching them really closely because, for one, I needed to order my cards for Chicago, but also because I wanted to see what was kind of hitting the block and whatnot. This card's already gone through like one full sellout, and then it almost went through another sellout the last time I checked. So it's definitely a card that people are buying. So if you're thinking that, you know, the price will stay at $4, I don't think it will.
Well, long term, so, I would buy 10 of these and hold on to them for a while. And I'm actually thinking about doing it right now.
For modern
and legacy, like,
okay.
Uncounterability for burn is a huge deal. Like, sometimes you just have to say, no, you can't kill that spell, because you just need to push 4 damage through. 4 damage for 3 mana is a little rough of a rate. It's about as good of a rate as you're going to get in modern. And, like, there's Flame Rift, but Flame Rift also deals 4 damage to you in legacy. But, like, 4 damage uncounterable is not something to scoff at. One-fifth of their life points, you know, you just go bolt this thing, and they're at 10. And in Modern, that's certainly probably they're at 5, because they fetch shock once or twice. They thought seized you, and they had to have taken this, because they're like, that's going to deal 4 to me. So I am actually pretty high on this card in burn in all formats. I am no mountain expert, I will gladly admit that. But I'm pretty high on this card. And if my opponent,
I don't know if it's strong enough for Modern or Legacy. However, I agree with you, Daryl. There's definitely a lot of potential there. Because, like, you're a Miracles player in Legacy. Like, if I boarded this in against Miracles, it's not a card you would be happy at all to see.
Particularly happy about that. Yeah. Four damage. Can't counter that with counterbalance. I'm at 6. Well, I'm at 2. Hope you don't draw another one of those. So yeah, I would buy 10 of these, and I'm probably going to if they stay at $4.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely a thing you want to do, like when you're in the battles in Modern with a blue deck that's running, like, you know, mana leaks and whatnot. The uncounterability is great, but is it worth playing a 3 mana spell when you're running 19 lands and 10 fetches in like those Modern bird decks versus just like trying to stack up a couple instants at the end of their turn and after you untap.
I don't know. Well, as the resident burn mage here, if you're gonna play this card in Legacy or Modern, here's what it's gonna be. It's gonna be like a 2 to 4 of in the sideboard, and it's really only against like the specific blue decks that you need it against. Like, okay, I would never play this card main deck unless the format really was like some weird shift where it made sense. Because, like, you just can't afford to play a 3-mana spell like this in the main deck. But there are some matchups where the spell is a game changer. So that's where I would want it if I played it.
John, I should say that, like I mentioned earlier, I've been on Cockatrice all week. And I've been playing primarily all of the red decks in Modern right now. And I put together the Naya Burn. That deck is pretty brutal. Sure. It's pretty brutal. Mine, I got a list from one of the top 8s or something. And this deck runs 1 Flame Javelin. Which To be honest with you, I haven't even drawn it once all week.
I know why the guy, I know the list you're talking about, why the guy included it. It was because he wanted a card that's, what was it? It's like, I think he wanted to get around like Spell Snare, or he didn't want it to hit, get hit by his own Eidolons. Okay. There was like a real specific reason that he threw the one of in there, but yeah, I saw that in there.
It seems good.
Also hits.
Brimstone Volley seems good in there now that they're running the four Nacatls too. A lot of those decks have four Wild Nacatls. I don't know if you've seen that, but
wait, are we talking about Burn or are we talking about Naya?
Naya Burn. Yeah, they're running four. So the Naya Burn decks have got the four Goblin guys. They've got the four Eidolon of Great Revel, and two Grim Lavamancer typically. But now I think they're dropping the Lavamancers for four Wild Nacatls.
At least the last two. Or they're cutting Swift Spear for
Wild Nacatls. No. Oh, sorry. Swift Spear is still in the deck. But because they've got the four Tarkus Command, they get more value out of more creatures now.
All right.
There might be some people doing that, but that's like definitely incorrect. Like, I would not do that as a Burn player.
You think so? That's the trend, man.
You don't want Wild Nacatl in that deck, man. It's not good. Trust me, I've tested a lot of that stuff. It's really
All right. Quit fighting over your lightning bolts.
Yeah. Jeez. Enough about Burn.
All right, that's I got a couple more for you here.
I need Brandon's input on these cards too. Brandon, are you still there?
Brandon, wake up.
Yo, I'm here. Look, I'm with John. This isn't the Red Deck Winning Podcast.
Exactly. All right.
Let's blaze it.
All right. Yeah, let's blaze it out of the Red Deck.
All right. I have a feeling this will be a short one, but it's worth talking about. Kaifeon's Irregulars. Daryl, you got that one?
Yep. Two white, human soldier, renown, which is if a creature deals combat damage to a player and it isn't renowned, put a 1/1 counter on it and it becomes renowned. So it's renown X. If it had renown 2, it would be 2 counters. This guy has renown 1. And white, tap a creature.
And it's a 4/3, right?
4/3, yeah. Does not tap him to tap a creature. So if you're playing him, you're untapping with double tap your guy, attack, make a 5/4. So that's sort of the baseline. And so would you play a 4-mana 5/4 that could tap your opponent's guys?
Hell yeah, I would. I mean, is it good enough? It costs 4 mana.
Brandon, what do you think?
I think it's too much mana. If you're doing white weenie, you just want to play more weenies.
So I could see this being in like an Abzan midrange deck. So it'll still die to Languish, unfortunately, which is, you know, you're failing the 4-mana removal test. But I could see, like, a deck full of Sea Drinos playing this guy to tap down their guys and break the board still. So I could see this, like, being an Abzan Mirror Trump.
Yeah.
I think the card is an interesting design, and I like the design. I don't think it's going to be competitive, unfortunately.
I mean, I just gave you the literal best case scenario. Like, you're in the Abzan mirror and you have this guy in play and tap down their rhinos and attack them with rhinos.
I'd rather play more rhinos.
That's the best case scenario I got.
What does he cost mana wise again?
4 mana. Four mana. He costs exactly 1 siege rhino.
I think in that matchup, in that situation, just give me a Tassiger and let me go to town. Give me a Whisperwood Elemental.
I'm not saying this guy's better than Whisperwood Elemental. No, don't. I'm just saying, in the best upside situation, you have this guy in play in like a control or a control mirror, in a creature mirror.
You found a limited piece of gold. Let's hit the next card. Yeah.
All right, before we move on, though, let me just say this. We've got all these, like, beautiful 4-drop white creatures in this format, and not one of them sees play, so I don't think this guy is going to. But Ojutai's Exemplar seems like a fine card that doesn't get played, probably in the same situation as this guy. And then also, hey, stay tuned, because those 4-mana birds that put counters on creatures and, like, get bigger when they have counters, you know what I'm talking about? Something of Anafenza.
Island, or what is it? First Cleric of Roshan or something like that.
Those guys, ready for their
debut. What the hell is that? I love that card.
High Lords of Arishin or something.
Yeah. Those guys are awesome. Yeah. They're going to see play, I guarantee it. All right, we're going on here. Graveblade Marauder.
Yep. Daryl. Three mana, 2 and a black. Human Warrior, 1/4 Death Touch. Whenever it deals damage to a player, combat damage, I should be, I guess, more specific. That player loses life equal to the number of creatures in your graveyard.
All right, you ready for the combo?
Okay.
All right, turn 2, Satyr Wayfinder.
Yep.
Mill a bunch of dudes. Find your Rogue's Passage. Turn 3, Hateblade. Turn 4, swing with unblockable Hateblade via Rogue's Passage.
I think Rogue's Passage is 4 colorless and tap it, so I think you
need to It is. Get out of here.
I played the Elvish Mystic.
Get out of here.
I mean, as much as Brandon's joking around, like, I actually did play against this card online. And
I mean, the card seems sweet, yeah.
He took me to school with it. Like, hey. He had multiples out, I think, too, because it's not legendary, but...
Right.
Yeah. You gotta block that guy, or you're gonna die.
Sultai Whip.
Yeah, I die.
You see him in Sultai Whip? Your graveyard is full of creatures. You whip a dude back, and you win the game. You end the game after a wrath spell.
He's cool, man. You mean if you whip him and just attack him, you can kill him on the spot?
Yeah, you make it rain. They have to have a blocker all the time. Or a removal spell.
Oh, my God.
He's interesting, man. He's really interesting.
No, I'm serious. He's good. He's good.
No, Daryl, think about this for a minute, though.
What is his price point?
Like $1. He's like $1.
Okay, I would buy my playset. I would buy my playset.
Buy 1,000 of these.
I would buy a playset at $1.
Come on. No,
he's very much a build around card.
Yes,
he's
very
much
a
build around card. But there's applications here. I mean, the haste aspect is not that difficult to do. You got to think about some of the cards you could pair with him too, if you're going to do like the ability to gain haste. I mean, you mentioned whip, but like I'm going to go back to red for a second here, but you play a card like Hammer Hand on him and he gets haste and then a creature can't block him that turn.
So then that
card becomes really interesting.
We're approaching Master of Cruelty's power level here.
Actually, that is pretty sweet. But this guy makes the aggro decks cry too, right? He's got 4 toughness.
And he's got Death Touch.
He's got Death Touch. He does cost 3 mana. It would be nice if he cost 2 mana.
You
can't have everything. Buy 1,000.
The only thing I was quitting for was because we actually said we're going to make it rain with this guy. And yeah,
We're going to make it rain the corpses from your grave.
Nope. All right. Onward, please.
All right, last one
for
me.
Wait, so his nickname is Dollar Bill, right?
Dollar Bill.
Yeah. All right.
Dollar Bill Marauder. All right. Okay.
Some of you guys are dead to me.
All right, here we go. Daryl, Woodland Bellower is the last one. Hit me. This is a mythic. Pre-order $6.
Dude, this is the green Titan in the cycle of one Titan and the other colors didn't get a Titan.
Yes. Daryl.
6 mana, 4 green for a 6/5 beast. When it comes into play, you can search your deck for a non-legendary green creature with a CMC of 3 or less, put it into play, and then shuffle your library.
Okay, this guy's not a beast, but he's a deer bear.
No, he's a beast.
I think he's more of a man bear.
He's a deer bear with a lion's tail.
He's a man bear pig.
All right, so let me hit you with the T-Woo brew, and then you guys will be over this card.
Okay. Oh, T-Woo, I respect.
Over it? Wait a second. TV's going to make us
over
not
as,
like
as in like smitten with this card or
no,
over
as in you as just in... don't want to hear any more about it.
Okay.
All right.
Okay, well,
Painter Servant.
Oh, God.
Everything is green.
Yeah.
Woodland Bellower. Trigger. Phantasmal Image.
Cobbled.
Trigger. Phantasmal Image. Trigger. Phantasmal Image. Trigger. Phantasmal Image. Trigger. Ruthless Goblin. All your guys get haste and have to attack. Attack them for 33.
GG.
Yes.
Dude, Travis Wu, so ridiculous.
Oh, I hate all of you for actually thinking this is okay.
This is good.
This card has huge upside.
Why would we even play Ocean Shoal Grizzlebrand when you can play 4X Phantasmal Image?
Oh, boy. This guy doesn't have Trample.
So in Standard, this guy is fine. It's a good body. So you're getting basically... Polypernos' body is 4 mana. You're paying 2 mana to put a 3 mana creature from your deck into play. That's worth 2 mana.
I think you always think standard like cards are it's slow so that they can accommodate these cards. Like I don't know, man. It's still pretty tough for cards to make the mustard. That was standing. Interesting. But...
I was looking at the rate on the body. Like you're saying, like Polypernos is a 5/5 for 4. So you're getting that body for 4 mana. And you're paying 2 extra mana to put a 3 mana creature into play. Like that's a rate I would totally buy at. Would pay 2 mana to Demonic Tutor for a 3 mana creature. So and put it into play is what I'm saying.
The tutor makes this guy real scary.
Yeah, like, that's very very reasonable.
This guy could be like a really interesting card. I think this card may end up like there could be a scenario where this card just never sees play. But at the same time, like. This guy can tutor up a lot of like really interesting bullets.
So he tutors up Corsair Crucifix, Reclamation Sage, Hornet's Nest, the elf guy that drains them if you're in the market for that.
Yep.
What else can we get standard?
Planeswalkers, any of those flippy planeswalkers? I don't know if that's relevant.
Elvish Visionary or extra value.
Can't get planeswalkers.
Oh, green.
No, you can get Nissa.
No, legendary.
No, non-legendary.
It does say that.
You can get Sylvan Caryatid or Sylvan Wayfinder.
Hornet Nest.
I already said that.
Did you? Oh, okay. Sorry.
Yeah.
Deck plays,
I think it's
deck
exactly
3
CC. It's not 3 or less, right?
Is it
no,
really?
It's 3 or less. So you can get Wayfinder.
Yeah, it's 3 or less.
Or Caryatid or Rattleclaw Mystic or Den Protector or Death Mist Raptor.
Or if you want to get real janky, Elvish Visionary.
Oh, why is that a Fenza Legendary? You can get Fleeceman Lion, you can get Rock Shots at Death Dealer. I'm out of guys.
How much is this guy selling for right now?
$6.
There's no way he's going to stay at $6.
Yeah, that's way too expensive.
No, he's going to go up.
EDH. What? EDH. Look, this guy's mythic.
This is a guy that only increases in value the longer he's in print.
Yeah, there's going to be a combo. There's going to be a combo in EDH that's worth playing this guy for.
I'm not sold on it. I think he's cool. I think there could be an explosive deck that we don't see yet. But $6?
The Phantasmal Image deck, dude. You just got to get in on it.
John, I'll bet you one Woodland Bellower he'll be worth 12 in a year from now.
Okay, here's the thing with this. If you're going to buy into this card, I think you should wait, and here's why. If this card is as good as you think it is, I think this card's going to drop initially. I think if we give this a month or two, this card's going to be really low and then potentially could explode.
Yeah, I agree with you. But if it so happens that someone's secretly brewing some sick tech right now in the first top 8 results have this guy, he's going to skyrocket. He's going up.
Yeah, but $6, man, that's a big buy-in.
Come on. That's a pack of Magic cards.
If he goes from 6 to 50 cents and you bought in on him, I think that's a scary thing. Well, he won't be 50 cents. I take it back. He's a mythic, so he won't be 50 cents, but he could be real cheap. I don't know.
He'll never be lower than 2.
Okay.
All right, that's a bold statement. I'm going to have to figure out what we can get in standard with this card. My interest is peaked.
I'm going to piggyback off this segment that Corey's put out here. We've gone through some of these casual cards that you brought up here, potentially non-casual. What does each of you think is the most interesting card to you in this set?
Ooh.
Corey, start with you.
So, define interesting as in
I guess interesting
playable
as in like,
or
card do you, like, what card do you really like in this set? What card's kind of something that's up your alleyway or something that you think is kind of interesting, can be explosive, you know, whatever you feel like talking about?
Dealer, I would just like a Languish, please. Like, that's all. Thank you for my 4-mana removal spell that kills everything but Siege Rhino. I'll figure out how to kill that guy later.
Daryl, are you thinking Eternal with that? Because you don't
no,
standard.
No, absolutely not. No, I'm going to have to standard at some point. But no, okay. I think that, like, Languish actually fits very well into, like, the Abzan control deck because you get to Languish and leave behind your, like, Siege Rhinos and Tassigers. And I think it's very good at controlling Deathless Raptor. It does something very useful, which is kills monstrous Fleecebane Lion, which is something that I think the format's been looking for, like a wrath spell that actually does that, which is very nice. So I think it fits exactly where you need a wrath spell to fit in. Mm-hmm. And between it and Perilous Vault and Crux of Fate and End Hostilities and Dune Blast and, you know, all the various mass removal spells in Standard, you can sort of figure out how you want to pile in your mass removal spells that you want to play, that you can get a really good mix of ways to kill creatures. So I think it's very interesting that they try to create this design space that, you know, here are all these mass removal spells, and you have to be very strategically nimble to figure out which ones you need in your deck at which time and when to fire them off and how useful they are and where their diminishing return points are. So I think not necessarily Languish itself, but the concept of how they're trying to set up removal in standard is very interesting to me. Just trying to figure out how you should be playing the removal game.
Okay, so you like Languish. You like what it does with the format.
Yeah.
Corey, what about you?
I'm still thinking. Brandon?
All right, this one's an uncommon.
Okay.
Magmatic Visions. Insight. All right, one red, sorcery. All right, cool. In addition to casting Magmatic Insights, discard a land card. All right, whatever. Oh, yeah. I didn't need that. Draw two cards. Sweet. Okay, but
this
you know
going
what?
Right into Brando's deck.
You know what I did before that, though? Before I played that Insight, I cracked a fetch land for a red. And I dumped a land. And now I'm moving into turn two. And I'm going to crack another land. And then I'm going to drop a turn two Tasigur.
Yeah, yeah. I like it.
That's pretty hot. I happen to like this card a lot too, Brandon. I ordered my playset already.
You splurged the $4.
Oh, I pretty much ordered all the red cards, so I guess that's not saying anything, but yeah. No, that card seems sweet, man. Like, would you play that in your Loam deck in Legacy?
Yeah, I think, in Legacy, no, Modern.
In Lands.
In Modern, I want to play this, and instead of Seismic Assault, run the new Seismic Assault that only costs one man, and you got to pay a red activation for it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that card's awesome, too. Molten Vortex for any of those listening.
Yep, so now you got Faithless Looting, Magmatic Insight for your card draw, and then you got the one mana red enchantment instead of dumping the three mana into Seismic, because three red mana in that Loam deck is just such a dedication. You can't splash any other colors, really. So I really like the implications of this new card.
One thing with the card, though, is that...
The Insight. I really like the Magmatic Insight.
Oh, sorry. Daryl's typing stuff.
Well, one thing with the card is that... Just ignore me. The Tasigur bit is cool. I like that aspect of it that you're mentioning. It is conditional, though. I mean, people have to remember that you do have to discard a land, so it's not like a Tormented Voice or a Faithless Looting where you just pitch some cards. Like, you have to have the condition met. So I've had situations where I've played with this card and couldn't fire it off exactly in the points where I wanted to. But it's a value card, and it's a red card that says draw on it. So and it's also only one red mana. So I think all those things are pretty huge, which make it interesting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think from your point, John, it's great filtering. And then from my side, I just really like the delve enabling that it does.
Yeah, super delve, yep. Well, delve and also like dredge, too, if you're playing your Loam deck and you're playing it.
Yep. Yeah, absolutely. Corey, are you ready yet? I got another one if you guys want to wait.
I also have the report on reasonable magic cards that you can acquire with our 6-mana Titan.
Oh,
friend. That's
what we're talking about.
Oh, God.
Go on. All right, so we have Yasova Dragonclaw, the 4/2 trampler that threatens their guys.
Oh, so good.
Warden of the First Tree.
Eh.
Boon Seder.
Boon.
Savage Knuckleblade.
Oh. That guy is actually who I saw this creature get.
Is that six I saw a team mana deck for online. 10 power?
Yeah,
that's six mana for 10 power. And you can haste up the Knuckleblade still.
That happened to me online. This guy, a guy played that 6/5 dude, tutored up a Savage Knuckleblade and just 10 me.
You can get Reverent Hunter, which is guaranteed to be a 3/3 unless they kill your 6/5.
Oh, man, that's what I was just going
to
say.
A 4/4. Guaranteed to be a 4/4.
Yep.
So that's another 6 mana for 10 power. And if you have Green Devotion, you get to blow them out and make
Why is he
gigantic
a 4/4?
Creature. Because he counts his devotion and the other guy's.
Oh, he gets
guy's
three
devotion.
Counters.
Yeah,
that's right.
Yeah, so he becomes guaranteed a 4/4 if you don't have any other creatures in play.
Yep.
And there was one more. Oh, Heir of the Wilds.
Mana Guard your Hydra.
And, I think the Enter the Battlefield guys and the big guys are the more impressive ones, though, for that.
Yeah, Boon Seder. Oh, and the last one was Avatar of the Resolute.
Oh, yeah, that guy. Well,
is that card?
It's a 3/2. It's a green 3. Let me go back to it. It's a green.
Does he only get green creatures?
Yeah, he only gets green creatures.
Okay.
Is a 3/2 reach trample comes to play with a 1/1 counter for each other creature with a 1/1 counter you control. So it can be underwhelming, but if you have something dropping one counters on your guys, you go, you can make like a 7-6. So, I mean, most impressive are like Boonsader, Knuckleblade, and Reverent Hunter. So, I mean, you could just make big piles of idiots forever. Sort of. Are we out of stuff here, guys?
All right, I've got one for you.
Corey, what's your card?
All right, I don't want to do the most obvious one, but Pile Driver. As soon as that one got spoiled, I was like, I snapped, like, bought up a bunch of stuff that I thought was going to be affected by it, and it already did. I mean, like, a lot of the goblins that you could see in, like, a modern list are going up. But I've been trying the, like, collected goblin, like, green-red in modern, and it is, it's explosive. It's really good. Can you hear that? There's, like,
somebody street driving
going
car.
On outside of my... let me close the window.
People are just slinging some spells outside your window, man.
Yeah, can you still hear it?
Nelly's street sweeping out there.
But I'll put that list. I'll put that list in the notes.
Which card did you say again, Corey?
Pile Driver.
Oh, Pile Driver, right? Yeah. Okay. Yeah, it's good.
Yeah, it's. I'm telling you, modern green red modern goblins sideboard Atarkus Command. Like otherwise, four collected company and all the rest goblins. It's good. It's very good. You've got plays like turn one, guide, attack for two, right? Turn two, guide attacks again, get the pile driver out. Turn three, Rabble Master. Okay.
What do you guys think about, what do you guys think about Demonic Pact? I think that's the name of the card.
Yeah, the enchantment that's like pick one of these, and you have to pick one, and one of them's like you lose the game. Yeah, that card, yeah, it's interesting. Not good in standard.
Jerry T just had a huge article on it today.
Like, only good for value.
He's like the standard master, so. And when him and Brad Nelson talk, I always listen. But,
Oh, yeah. I'm not trying to donate this card at all. I'm just trying to play it.
So, you know what you can do with this card, though? So, you can play it and get some value out of it.
Command it, yeah.
Well, yeah, that's what people have been doing and saying. Like, but that's, you know, losing value in some respects. So he's like, well, yeah, that's poopy. You know, you're losing value and you're playing this card and you're working too hard for it. Mm-hmm. I want to bounce it and I want to bounce it and use it again.
I want to blink it. I don't want to bounce
or blink it. He was going through and looking at what possibilities there are. There's a somewhat underused command that goes well with this card.
Slumgar's command.
Yeah.
Get out of here.
It's black too.
Get out of here.
Blue black control.
Just get out of here. That card is so.
What
is
that? What does the card do? Somebody read it off. I can't remember.
I don't have it looked up, but I'm pretty sure it's bounce target permanent or non-land permanent, destroy target planeswalker, counter target non-creature spell, or give a creature -3/-3 till end of turn.
You got it all for a three colorless blue black instant.
Yes.
No, not Slumgar's Command. Well, yeah, sure, that does that stuff, but the Pact, like a new card.
Combo
what is,
this.
What does the new
that.
Card do? The new card says choose one every upkeep. Draw two cards. Your opponent discards two cards. Four something, and you gain four life. You lose the game.
Those are all good abilities.
Except for you lose the game. Yeah,
except for that
game,
whole also. Lose the game.
That's if you donate it.
No. Just stop.
Right.
Dude, I think the donate thing's hilarious.
It's 6 mana!
Yeah, after you get all the great stuff out of it.
It's 6 mana! The good donate spell is like
about,
6
you could
mana.
Do some, like, you could do some bizarre... Wait, the card is 6 mana? No, the card's 4
no,
mana.
No, the donate spell in standard is 6 mana.
Oh, and
in modern, though, you could bizarre trader this thing.
Oh, God. You guys just stop it, please.
I think you're underestimating this card, Daryl. I think this.
I just want to play this card with Cryptic Command.
Sure, that's good too. Obviously, one card that I think I've been impressed with in the set is Abbot of the Carol Keep. Have you guys seen that card?
All right, what is
it,
Jack?
Talk about it.
It's a one red, one colorless for a 2/1.
Damn it!
It has prowess. And when it enters the battlefield, you exile the top card and you can play it till end of turn. So It gives you the Chandra effect when it comes into play. It's a grizzly bear with prowess, basically. I think I've been impressed. Other than Exquisite Firecraft, this has been the card that's impressed me the most. Patrick Chapin had a big article on a bunch of red decks, and that was like the hallmark card that he had in every deck. And normally I don't like his articles much anymore, but I think he's kind of dead on with this. This card's super good value. Like, you can play Wild Slashes, Mountains, all your one drops, two drops, that sort of thing as you're progressing through the game. And you can filter through your deck pretty good with him too. Yeah, and he's only $3.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that, John. I figured that would be something that you'd be on.
Yeah, I like that card a lot. I think it's something worth getting because I think he's going to be playing a lot of decks.
Cool.
We'll see. The problem is, like, you know, the red cards are all over in different strategies, so I don't know. They might remain cheap. Like you said, Corey, you know, Pile Driver is the big card, and you have to basically play Goblins. Mm-hmm. Like, you were talking about Atarka's Command and Collected Company. I know you're talking about Modern, but, I mean, that's been rumored in Standard and stuff too. But, like, the problem is that, like, Atarka's Command making you go green has been a big contesting point that I've seen so far. Like, people can't figure out whether you want to go mono-red Goblins or green-red Goblins or even just less Goblins and more regular aggro. So I don't know where that's going to end up being on the debate side because there's value on both sides of the coin. But
yeah. Well, I guess we'll see you soon, huh?
Brandon, do you see anything else that you found interesting?
I mean, the Planeswalkers are all obvious. So yeah.
You're a big Legacy Modern guy, and Daryl obviously too. I mean, you guys see anything here that could break into that realm?
Into the non-rotating realm?
Yeah, there's the white Sneaking Show hate.
Ooh, yeah, that card looks sweet.
Yeah, it's a cantrip, so it can be played in, like, decks that don't want Containment Priest and Legacy, and it's actually better in Modern, where if you're trying to play like a Velocity game, you can play it against Splinter Twin.
I like
it's instant speed, yeah, which is nice.
Well, no, it doesn't stop tokens. Containment Priest says non-tokens.
Oh, I see.
What's
Containment Priest isn't Modern legal anyway.
I understand that. That's why I'm
wait,
drawing.
What is what's the wording of the card?
The card is any creature that's not cast from someone's hand. So tokens as well as reanimated creatures, creatures that are put into play like from effects like Show and Tell, Dramatic Entrance. So you get literally everything. So you can actually...
Goryeo's Vengeance.
Yeah, Goryeo's Vengeance, correct. So you can actually stop your Splinter Twin from going off with this card and kind of draw a card and give yourself a couple of draw steps to find a removal spell if you didn't have it already, or an enchant removal spell or something like that.
That stuff's a lot of Modern combo. Goryeo's Vengeance, yeah. Through the Breach, any of the Finks combo.
Get that Collected Company out of here.
Yeah. Collected Company, damn. That's a great Modern sideboard.
Yes.
That's a good Standard sideboard.
Yeah, true. Cool.
All right, I think that about wraps it up, guys.
Yeah,
Brandon, you got stuff on the dock. Do you want to talk about any of that, or is that from last week?
We'll save that for next week. We'll see. We'll see how I'm feeling about Origins in a week from now.
Okay.
Are you guys going to the pre-release?
Yeah.
Nope.
Well, nope. I think we just
Brandon, are you going to the Madison one, or where are you going?
Yeah, I think I'm going to show up to Wisconsin at least, probably Madison.
Sweet, man. Yeah, I'll be at the midnight and the Saturday morning. So,
all right. Which one, Mox?
Yeah.
All right. Oh, they owe us another dollar.
What?
Every time we say Mox.
One more. There's one more.
I don't know, man. They're saving us bucks because every other pre-release in town is like $5 more. So.
All right. We can say their
now
name.
Now they owe us another dollar because you just promoted
them. Damn.
All right. Anything non-MTG? Daryl, did you fall down any stairs this week?
No.
Damn.
Just had a flooded bathroom this week. And two toilets when I got home from work on Monday.
I thought you said a blooded bathroom. I was about to
flooded.
What?
No, the...
Are you doing some Dexter going on over there? What the hell?
Yeah, absolutely. No, I woke up on Monday morning and the drain pipe underneath my apartment complex ruptured, and it backed up into my toilet and flooded my bathroom. So they had to take the toilet off the caulking,
figured out that they couldn't salvage it, had to put a new toilet in, but left the old toilet in my bathroom for a couple days. So I had two toilets in my bathroom when I came home on Monday, still had two toilets on Tuesday, and they finally got it out today. And then they, like, shot back to my bathroom and mopped it and all that shit.
So did you find out that you were using the right one all along?
I was using the right toilet all along.
Okay, good.
Daryl, have you descended on the magic shops of Baltimore yet?
I have. There's one extremely good one. They have Legacy every Tuesday night.
Nice.
And it's like $10. It's like $10 buy-in, but it's like four buy-ins if you 3-0. It's only three rounds. And then like two buy-ins if you 2-1. So like you can easily go infinite by just like winning two rounds. And then they have $8 Friday Night Modern F&Ms, four-round F&Ms. For like 18 packs, so I'm gonna go play FNM this week. Go play some Modern. Try and get me a Path to Exile.
Oh man, that's right.
You gotta go. You gotta get those.
Sweet.
No, you don't have to get those. You just have to get Serum Vision second one.
Both of them. I think the Path is worth more in the long run, isn't it?
I already have four paths. I don't need foil paths. I don't have any ones. Serum Visions.
You don't have.
Foil I don't have any ones. Serum Visions. No, I don't. I like the old path art.
Oh, this is the best one, Daryl.
Okay, I mean, respectfully allow you to think that.
All right.
I'll tell you you're an idiot and move on with my day.
Oh, I like the path art where the dude's got a like a hoe and he's out in the farm fields.
Oh, Sword Supply Shares, perfect. Yeah, I love that art too. It's great. In fact, much better also.
Yeah.
So the outro music's going to be Use a Hoe by Ludacris, right? Corey.
Oh my god.
If I had the internet that functioned today, I would be happy to find that and put it in there. But unfortunately, I cannot.
Done.
Okay, and that starts. Or John, you were just about to say something.
No.
No, okay.
Let's get out of here.
Now.